And Juno is all done with her timeout.
Why did she have a timeout?
Because she peed in the dog bed.
Juno?
Right in front of us. Not like we found it later. Like, we were looking at people, she did it. And we were like, you little brat.
What a
shit. We just took her out, like, 15 minutes before.
Did you guys take them with you to your parents?
Sean didn't go. I was the only one who went.
Oh.
Yeah, so I took them with me. And then I was trying to bring stuff in, and then Sean didn't eat dinner yet, so I brought a McDonald's, and I couldn't carry the drinks and the food and the puppies and the stuff from my parents' house in. Mm-hmm. So he came downstairs to help me. So we took the dogs out, literally came in our apartment, like 10 minutes later, Juno pissed.
What a little shit.
I know. I was like, we were literally outside waiting for you to pee, and you wouldn't. So she got a timeout in her crate.
Oh boy, that's really funny.
Kind of.
You'll laugh about it when she's a grown-up dog.
Maybe. Okay, well, hi, hello, everyone. Welcome
hi.
To Spoopy and Creppy. Spoopy, Creppy.
Where we make all of your spoopy, creppy dreams come true.
Or we cause spoopy, creppy dreams for you. I don't know. One or the other.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe.
I mean, we're just here to have a good time.
Yeah. You know? This is basically us recording our phone conversations, plus a little bit more research.
Yeah, this is a little bit more work, but you know, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Okay, well, I'm excited because this is episode 14, which means that I go first, which I'm excited about for this because I had chosen the topic of missing people.
I have this really bad habit of spending all day in my bed.
Same.
So I just leave piles of stuff all around the bed because I'm like, what if I need this? It has to be in reach. And then I just don't move any of it. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I was the fan.
We have, like, bedside tables. Mm-hmm. And we have just, well, I have a bedside table. Sean's bedside table is still in the living room because we just collected a bunch of shit on it and we didn't feel like cleaning the shit off and putting it in its proper places yet. So it's just still sitting there. But we're eventually going to have, we have these matching wiener dog lamps. Well, I have two wiener dog lamps that are identical, so we are going to put them on either side of our bed so that we could, like, have a light, and we have a, like, bedside table for it to go on, and so I have mine, and the toolboxes were on my side of the bedroom, but they're not. Maybe they're under my clothes somewhere. I don't know. I've had a giant pile of clothes on my floor since we moved in, so.
Yeah, Matt and I have, we have these little tiny side tables because our bed takes up most of our room, unfortunately. We got these matching ones at IKEA. They were like $20 a piece.
Oh, ours are from IKEA too, and, but they were only $7 each.
Oh, no, ours were not that cheap. I wish. And then we have matching those like rock salt lamps.
Yes.
Salt lamps. We have matching salt lamps on each side because Margaret gave them to us.
Aww.
And we're like free lamps. Because she found out that if her cats were to like lick them or something, then they would die. So she's like, hey, do you want to take these lamps so my cats don't die?
Oh.
It's like, sure, free lamps.
Yeah.
So we're those people with like rock salt lamps next to our bed.
Yeah, I have mine by my desk so I can use it while I'm working. But Cassidy got it for me a few years ago for my birthday because she was like, I wanted to get you something, but I didn't know what you wanted. So I got you something that I thought you might need, even though you probably don't want it. And I was like, no, I dig this. It's supposed to help you have a better vibe. But it was like a very like Cassidy present to get someone a rock salt lamp. And this was like probably 2015. So it's probably like 5 years ago. But
Yeah, like they're actually really nice. Like ours have like the dimmer switch, so you can make it however bright or dull you want. And it's like a nice soft pink light. So we use it for like when we're winding down, but we still need a light, like if we're reading or something, but we don't want like the big light on, you know? And it's just nice. It has a good vibe.
That's what I put on my desk. I was like, this is a good vibe for like when I'm working, and if I leave it in the living room, it'll suck all the toxins out of our living room, I hope.
Yeah, I mean, it does make us look like essential oil peddlers a little bit, but it's fine.
It's fine.
No one is here to see it, so.
Exactly.
So back to the spoopy stuff. Now that we've had a great conversation about salt lamps.
Just riveting. Let's give the people what they want. I don't remember how much I said about this, so I'm just going to start at the beginning. So, because it's
Sure.
an even number episode, I go first. And I'm excited about that because this was originally a topic that I had picked to do, which is like a missing persons case. And all I gotta say is that sometimes weird shit just pops in my head, and I don't know how my brain works, like at all. So it just led me down this road, and then I found this case, and then So I will get started, and then instead of like waiting until the end to tell you how I came across it, I do it at the beginning of the first paragraph, so I promise you won't have
Ooh, plot twist.
But don't worry, there's plenty of twists and turns in this story for the end, so I've moved it up to the beginning. Why I chose
I can't wait.
it. Okay, so when we were doing this, or when I looked it up, or when we were going to record, or something, was May 25th, which was like a month ago. So this was like gonna be the same week that this happened, which was a total coincidence, but now it is
Oh.
end of June, so we'll keep that same like excitement and energy going, even though it's not the
Okay.
same date anymore.
Right, let's do it.
Okay, so May 25th, 1979, there was a little boy, and he had just convinced his mom to let him walk to the bus stop alone for the first time. His mom like ran a daycare in their apartment, so she had two little kids to take care of that were younger than him. So she was like, "Okay, I guess you can walk to the bus stop." So his first time going alone, she did walk him downstairs in the apartment building that they lived in, and he only had to walk 2 blocks to get to his bus stop to get to school. But they lived in New York City in Soho, so it's like 2 New York City blocks. So like, if I had a kid, I would also be, what's the word I'm looking for? Cautious? That's not it.
Hesitant.
Yes, hesitant word. I would also be hesitant and have some reservations about like letting my 6-year-old kid walk to the bus stop by themselves. So, she walks her 6-year-old son downstairs, in the building, and then is like, "Okay, have a good day at school." And he had on his favorite hat, which was an Eastern Airlines hat, which the company doesn't exist anymore. But it was a cute, like, pilotish hat. And his backpack had, like, a bunch of little elephants all over it. And he had some toy cars in it. So just this
He's so
cute little
little.
6-year-old.
Six is so
Unfortunately,
young.
something bad is going to happen to him if you didn't figure that out already. His mom sent him on his way with a $1 bill to buy a soda on the way to the bus stop, and he like carried the bill in his hand. And that was the last time that Julie Pates ever saw her son eaten. So this is the story of the first missing milk carton kid.
Oh.
How did I get this idea? Because I was wondering who the first missing milk carton kid was. Why was I thinking about missing milk carton kids in 2020? Who the fuck knows? But that my brain works in weird ways, like I said. So I was just like, is there like a first? Like, I feel like there has to be a, you know, a definitive case that this is the first kid whose face they put on a milk carton. And it's not actually known if like this was the first one printed, but like it's very widely accepted that Aiden Pates is the first missing milk carton kid. So that's how we got there. And I had never heard of this before, so.
No.
Okay, so his mom got really worried when he didn't come home from school because he's six. So she, like, calls up the mom of his friend and who's also in class with him. And she's like, hey, can you ask your son if you saw Eaton at school? Also, I'm not sure how to say his name. It's E-T-A-N. So in something I listened to, but it was a British lady, she kept saying Eitan Pates. So I'm not sure if it's Eaton or Eitan, but
I would say Eaton.
That's what I think, but I don't know. So I apologize if I'm saying his whole name wrong, but anyways. So the friend says, no, I didn't see him at school. He didn't come to the bus stop. Like, he just, I haven't seen him all day. So his parents reported him missing because where did he go? Their apartment was quickly turned into a headquarters for the investigation. And there was like a flurry of police, a bunch of volunteers, a bunch of journalists that showed up. Eitan's face was everywhere. On the TV, he was in newspapers. Missing posters were put up with his face across New York. And of course, he was also on milk cartons. And I was telling my mom what I was going to do for this episode. And she was like, yeah, I remember getting milk cartons at school with like kids' pictures on them. Like, and we knew they were missing kids.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I was like, that's terrifying. I mean,
I'm so glad we didn't grow up in the 70s.
I mean, I don't want to out my mom's complete age, but she's about the same age as your mom. So, like, we're really thinking, like, very early 80s. But
yeah, our moms are young.
So, yeah, but still.
For, like, moms of our generation, anyway. Like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, yeah. So, they put his picture everywhere, and police went door to door in the apartment building and like in some other buildings on the way there. And they canvassed as many apartments as they could. And they looked in every room that people would let them in, just to see if there's anything suspicious, and nothing. After a few days of him being missing, his mother made a statement to the press and said, I hope he's with somebody wiser than he who will take care of him and is taking care of him. And if he is, I don't want to hurt you in any way, and I don't want to prosecute you. I just want you, whoever you are, to bring him home. So she really is just like, give me back my kid. I don't care as long as he comes back safe. Like, which is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Since he just kind of went missing on a 2-city block radius in New York, they didn't really know, like, or have an exact crime scene. So, besides it being 1979, they, like, don't know where to look. There was no obvious signs of distress or blood or clues or anything like that. None of his clothing was found, nothing. So there's literally 2 blocks in New York, and like, what are they going to do? Pick up every hair on the sidewalk and scrape up all the gum and test it, and, you know, whatever. And like, DNA is so limited at this time anyways. So they basically have really nothing to go on, unless they can find a witness. And They do identify some suspects, though. So one of them was named Jose Ramos. Ramos had been dating a woman who was hired to walk Eton Pates to the bus stop, or to and from the bus stop. So, like, Jose has a connection to the child. He was a convicted child molester, and
Oh, God.
I believe that the one of the cases they convicted him on, I think there were multiple. I didn't look it up all the way. I listened to like three podcasts on this, and I only wrote things down partially because I don't know what I was doing. But I'm pretty sure the same day that Aiden Pates went missing, I'm pretty sure he also molested another kid on like a kid on that day. So it was like this would have been, the second kid that he had done something with on that day. So that's like super suspicious. But they didn't really have anything to go on. In the year 2000, I don't know why it was so much later, but they eventually like searched a basement of his former residence. Like they dug up the whole basement and they found a bunch of bone fragments. And after testing, the bone fragments were identified as belonging to like animals and pets. So none of them were human bones.
Okay. That's good.
I know this case has a lot of like, ooh. So another one, another suspect was Othniel Miller, who was a handyman, and he knew Eitan because he had given him the dollar bill that he was holding on his way to school. I couldn't find anything if it was like, here's the dollar bill, little boy, or if it was like, will you help me, sweep this thing and I'll give you a dollar. Like, I couldn't find
Wait,
why he.
I thought his mom gave him the dollar.
His mom like gave him the dollar before he went to school, but like this guy had given him the dollar.
Oh, like prior.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this guy gave him the dollar actually, and then his mom handed it to him before he took it to school.
Okay.
So Othniel became a suspect when investigators learned a lot later on that a few days after his disappearance, Othniel had poured up a concrete floor like a few days afterwards. So obviously that's suspicious as fuck. Don't ever pour concrete. Just move somewhere that already has concrete.
True.
But yeah, so in 2012, they tore up the concrete floor, but they didn't find anything, which is like a
Okay.
long time later. Like, imagine someone coming to your house
Yeah.
and it's just like, hi, we think there might be a little boy buried under your concrete patio. Can we take a look? Like,
Yeah, I mean, that's like, what, 35 years later or something like
yeah,
that?
that's like a lot of time later.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the last suspect that is worth mentioning is named Pedro Hernandez. So when that concrete floor was torn up in 2012, they renewed a lot of media coverage of the case. And that prompted Pedro's brother-in-law to call the police and give him Pedro's name. He like was pretty sure that his brother-in-law had something to do with it. So Pedro had moved to New York City in 1979 when he was 18. He dropped out of high school, moved to New York, and he worked at this little bodega market store, which was like a lot between the apartment and the bus stop. So he had just moved into the city, but like right after Aiden's disappearance, he moved back to New Jersey. Oh,
Oh.
that's suspicious. And then
Yeah.
when he moved back, he started telling people that he had killed a boy in New York City. And he like told his church elder and a prayer group, and that apparently like broke down crying and repenting for his sins in front of the prayer group, so they weren't sure like what to think of it. And then there were some different accounts. So one of Pedro's friends was pretty sure that Pedro had mentioned killing a black child. And then Pedro's former wife said that, like, right before they got married, he confessed to her that he had killed a muchacho. And him using the word muchacho made the wife think that it was a teenager. So both of those are not.
Okay. So was Eaton Pates black or?
He was white. He had like brown hair and
Okay.
brown eyes.
Okay. I mean, I should have known better than to ask that because let's be real, the police would not put that much effort into finding a kid of color.
No, not in 1979. They wouldn't.
No. I mean, I should have known. That was a dumb question.
That's okay. His name is Hebrew because I looked it up and I was like, what kind of name is this? Like, what ethnicity? But yeah, there's a bunch of cute pictures of him. He's just like a cute little white kid. So yeah. When the police were interviewing Pedro, he confessed after only a few hours. He confessed to luring the boy into the basement of the bodega by offering him a soda. And Pedro says that's when he attacked him and choked him with his bare hands. But he says he didn't kill him. He just choked him until he was unconscious and then put him in a plastic bag. And then he put that plastic bag inside a box. And Pedro says that then he doesn't know what happened to the box. So he placed it like near a dumpster or out on the curb or near a dumpster on the curb. I found different, different things on that, but he placed it somewhere outside the store and doesn't know what happened to the box after that. Like he says he didn't move it or anything. So
Okay, so he just was like, oh, I'm just gonna choke this child for no fucking reason. Like,
yeah.
what the fuck?
Yeah, he
Like,
says he like blacked out and like went in a rage and wasn't in control of himself and whatever. It's kind of a stupid.
sure, Jan.
Yeah, right. And then there's also conflicting things. There are some things that say specifically he confessed to killing Eaton Pates. But there's one of the things I was listening to was saying that he isn't sure which like what boy it was. Like he just picked a little white boy on the street and like beat him and put him in a plastic bag and like got rid of him. So he like doesn't remember who the kid looks like. So he says there's no definitive proof that it was Aiden Pates, but yeah. That's a weird, yeah. So, in 2015, Pedro was brought to trial, and the only evidence they had against him was his own confession. Because by that time, it had been like 35 years, so they're not going to find DNA evidence or anything in the bodega. It had been torn down and converted into like a hair salon or something, I think they said. But yeah, so there's nothing just besides his confession. And the defense argued that Pedro has a really low IQ and he also has a personality disorder. So between the two of those things, he is not able to distinguish between reality and fantasy. So they say that like he might just be really confused and confess because he like had these thoughts of doing something like this, or he heard the story and like put it together in his mind or something, or like convinced himself that he did it, but that he actually didn't do it. And like I'm not sure because it is kind of a good, like, okay, yeah, this all makes sense. But the whole thing with like Oh, yeah, I just put the box on the street in New York City and I don't know where it went. Like, I don't
Yeah.
know what to think of that. And also, him confessing to, like, yeah, I lured this kid into the basement of the store. I choked him. I put him in a plastic bag and I put that bag in a box and I put that box out on the street. But he wasn't dead when I did that. Like, why would you put someone in a plastic bag and then put that bag in a box if they
Yeah,
weren't dead?
I don't know. I don't think I buy that. Like, I think one of the other two guys is a much better suspect.
Yeah, like there's.
Well, the first guy, like, he seems like the most likely culprit to me.
Yeah, so I don't know if I necessarily believe that it was Pedro.
I don't.
There isn't really anything that makes me feel good, like, okay, yeah, this is solved. So it's
Yeah.
kind of sucky. So during the trial, Pedro's daughter testified against him,
Oh.
citing that, like, he had really odd behavior after the attacks or after, the disappearance, including, like, mentioning weird dreams about something dying and he has to water it to make it grow again, and like some kind of like woman and child ghost that were visiting him. And she also would catch him talking to himself all the time, which I don't know if that's testifying against him that he was acting weird after the disappearance, or if that's kind of in favor of him, since the defense
Yeah.
says that he doesn't know how to distinguish reality and fantasy. That's kind of, so I don't get that.
Yeah, it sounds like, I don't know, that sounds like backing up the claims of like mental illness.
Yeah. So, the jury didn't really know what to think either. And after 18 days of being deadlocked, the judge
Oh,
declared a
damn.
mistrial. Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah.
So that was 2015. Pedro was retried in 2017 and he was found guilty of kidnapping and murder. He was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison. So he's still in prison and he won't be eligible for parole for another 22 years. But the implications of this case and the results of it are pretty massive for something that's not really well solved, not really well investigated, which is not necessarily the police's fault in this case, because, like, I wouldn't even know where to start looking or anything. But right after he went missing, kids started learning about stranger danger and, like, to be afraid of adults they don't know. So that's like where the stranger danger came from, was partially a result of his case, and a few other missing children. In 1984, 5 years after he had gone missing, President Ronald Reagan declared May 25th, the anniversary of Aiden's disappearance. He declared it was National Missing Children's Day. And that year, the Center for Missing and Exploited Children was founded as well, and a hotline that goes along with that center. So there did come some results from this case. In 2001, Eitan Peetz was legally declared dead in absentia, and May 25th became International Missing Children's Day in 2001, so it's now an international thing. And this is the worst part of the story. In September 2018, Julie and Stanley Pates moved from their Soho apartment. So they stayed there for like 40 years, hoping that their son would come home. And like, they're like, yep, he knows exactly where home is. And something was saying they kept the same phone number for a really long time, hoping that he would remember his phone number and call home or come home. And that just like breaks my heart that they spent that much time hoping their kid would come home.
Yeah.
But they, now that his siblings are grown up, so he had two siblings. He had a younger sister and then a youngest brother. And the youngest brother lives in Hawaii now, so that's where they relocated to be closer to him. And that's the story of the disappearance of the first missing milk carton kid, Eitan Pates.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
I really don't think that guy did it.
I don't know.
Like, I mean, a confession is only so much.
Yeah, and I read in one place, it was an internet news article, which wasn't like the most reliable source, which is why I didn't really mention it, but I'll mention it now. There were fellow employees of his who said that like he couldn't have done it because he wouldn't have had access to the basement in the bodega, which I don't know. There's just nothing solid. Like, it's like this kid just disappeared off the face of the earth. There's nothing left behind of him, and there's not really a trail to track unless someone definitively comes forward and says, yes, I did this. And since Pedro did that, that's kind of all the closure that like they can give the family and New York City and like parents everywhere that are worried about their kids. So that's really the only like chance they had at closure. So yeah.
Ugh, that makes me so sad.
Yeah. That's like the least satisfying ending case that I
like
have. But
I love a good missing persons case, but like the ones with the kids like that where they never find anything, like that
yeah,
makes me
like,
so sad.
It's not like they found his clothes on the side of the road, or they found a shoe or a hat or his backpack, or and like nothing was ever found, and it's been 40 years. So I just don't think that that case is ever going to really have closure, and I don't think his parents are ever going to really have closure either, which sucks for them. But they have to feel at least a little bit good knowing that even though there's no really good way to solve this tragedy, that the loss that they went through means that other people didn't have to go through that loss, because the Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the hotline was founded. And there's like, I'm sure there's a lot of kids out there I know that have not been found, or they haven't gotten their justice, but there has to be a good number of kids who have, and that has to make the parents feel a little tiny sliver better that at least someone else doesn't have to go through what they went through.
Yeah. Ugh, just a bummer all around.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Okay, well.
Sorry for that.
There's that.
Sorry for that big bummer. But we'll end on a different note. I don't know how different, but we'll find out.
Okay. So, I think I mentioned this before when we talked about this. But when I was looking for a missing persons case, I couldn't really think of like a first in terms of a missing persons case that I was like, yeah, I want to talk about this. So I just started looking up random missing persons cases. And when I wrote this up was right at the beginning, basically, of all the George Floyd, you know, protests and all that stuff. And I was reading an article about like suspicious disappearances and deaths that have to do with police officers. And I found this case. It's actually two cases, but the same suspect. So,
okay.
I am going to talk about the disappearance of Terrence Williams and Felipe Santos. I'm sure you've probably never heard of this.
Nope.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I'm sure they did lots of covering up, as you will see. This is suspicious as fuck. And yeah, let's dive right in here.
Yes, my
So,
goggles are on,
yes.
ready to dive.
Get your scuba tank ready.
Scuba Steve.
Okay. So, January 13th, 2004. Jason Gonzalez becomes worried that his roommate, 27-year-old Terrence Williams of Naples, Florida, had not yet arrived home after attending a party at a coworker's house on the night of January 11th, 2 days prior. Gonzalez sent Terrence's mother, her name was Marcia, expressing his
Marsha,
concern,
Marsha,
which
Marsha.
prompted, yes. So this prompted Marcia to call police to file a missing persons report, and then they started learning about what happened with Terrence in the last hours that anyone had seen or heard from him. And let's just say, this shit is suspicious as fuck. So, Terrence Williams left the party at his coworker's house a little after midnight, very early in the
It's a
morning,
little after
January
midnight
12th,
now.
2004. Ooh, spooky. So he did not have a valid driver's license because his had been revoked after he was pulled over for expired registration on his vehicle and he got a DUI. Whoops. Don't do that, kids. That's bad. So after he like tried to find a ride home, like an alternate ride, like to and from the party, but he couldn't find one, so he decided just to drive himself. Despite not having a license, probably not the smartest move, but you do what you gotta do, I guess. So his family and friends like never saw or heard from him again after that. So shortly after his mom filed a missing persons report, so this would be like this is that same day, this January 13th, so it's like a few hours later. His aunt had been calling around to like different tow yards to see if his car had been towed to one of them because obviously his car is gone too. And they were able to track his white Cadillac to a tow yard where she learned that it had been towed there. Like she asked them, like, where did they bring this car in from? And it had been towed there from the Naples Memorial Cemetery. For supposedly obstructing traffic, like it was supposedly just like left abandoned in the street outside the cemetery.
Interesting.
Yeah, so the tow truck company told her that the tow report had been signed by Deputy Steve Calkins of the Collier County Sheriff's Department. Terrence's family then contacted the Sheriff's Department and they learned that Calkins had never filed an incident report or an arrest report on Terrence Williams. So they were like, okay, this is really suspicious. And like, obviously, they're really worried about Terrence. So the mom then like calls the cemetery to see if they had seen anything or heard anything like the night her son had disappeared. And the workers at the cemetery told her that they witnessed Deputy Calkins pull Terrence over in the parking lot of the cemetery. And ask him for ID, which of course he didn't have because his license had been revoked. And then Calkins then asked Terrence to step out of the vehicle. He patted him down and then he put him in the back of his patrol car. Said Calkins had then approached the cemetery employees, asking them if he could leave Terrence's car in their parking lot before driving away with Terrence still in the backseat of his patrol car. About an hour or so later, they saw Calkins return to the cemetery alone with Terrence's keys, and he moved Terrence's Cadillac from the parking spot in the lot to the side of the road and then called a tow truck to have it towed.
What? That
Yeah.
makes no sense.
So they say that they saw him like come back with his keys. He was by himself like an hour later. Moves his car from the parking lot onto the side of the road and then calls the tow truck, being like, oh, yeah, there's a car abandoned on the side of the road that's obstructing traffic.
Yeah, 'cause you fucking put it there.
Yeah. So obviously that's really fucking suspicious. The mom like learns that, like, her and the rest of Terrence's family start just like bombarding the sheriff's department with phone calls asking to speak to Deputy Calkins. But then like they would call Calkins like via dispatch and be like, hey, these people want to talk to you about this person, blah blah blah. He kept claiming that he had no memory of making any arrests or having any cars towed on that night that Williams vanished, of course. And then, so, like, the family is, like, we don't, like, no. So they keep basically harassing the sheriff.
Rightfully so.
Yes, I mean, I am with them on this. So eventually, once they, like, kept contacting him, he started changing his story. And he was like, oh, wait, yeah, I guess I do remember that a little bit. Like, oh, yeah. So his supervisors are like, okay, you need to submit an incident report because obviously this thing happened and you never did any paperwork or anything. So in the report, he claims that he first came into contact with Terrence Williams at 12:15 a.m. on January 12, 2004, after noticing that his car was driving, quote unquote, in distress. He claims that he followed Terrence to the cemetery parking lot, where Terrence asked him for a ride to a nearby Circle K convenience store because he was late for work. Calkins reported that after he dropped off Terrence at the Circle K, Terrence told him that the paperwork for his car was in the car's glove compartment. And Calkins claimed that he then returned to Terrence's Cadillac with the keys with Terrence's permission and searched the car for said paperwork and then wasn't able to find it. And then he was mad because he thought that he had been lied to. So he said that he called the Circle K on his work-issued cell phone and asked to speak to Williams. And the store clerk there told him that Williams did not actually work there. And then in the report, he also said that he called in Terrence's license plate, like the license plate number, and discovered that the plates were expired. So, the police in the sheriff's department, like, obviously not him, but the other police, conduct an investigation into this report because this is suspicious, and they find even more suspicious things.
So,
number one, Terrence Williams did not work at the Circle K, and there's no reason why he would lie to Deputy Calkins and say that he did. Two, surveillance footage from the Circle K on January 12, 2004 shows no footage or evidence at all of Terrence or Deputy Calkins ever being there at all. Number three, phone records from Calkins' cell phone showed that he had not, in fact, called the Circle K looking for Terrence. And at this point, Terrence's mom, Marcia, files an official complaint against Deputy Calkins. And then a whole new lead into the investigation of her son's disappearance opens up after the Mexican consul in Miami contacts Marcia with a story about another man who had an experience with Deputy Calkins that was very creepily similar to that of her son's. So Felipe Santos was a 24-year-old Mexican native who was living in the U.S. undocumented in the nearby town of Imokalee, Florida, I think that says. Imokalee? I don't know. Florida's weird.
Yeah.
So it's like the next town over. He'd been in the U.S. for 3 years, and he basically was just working really hard as much as he could to send all his family or all his money back to his family that was still living in Mexico. So he was last seen on October 1st, 2003, approximately 6:30 a.m. He had been driving to work with his two brothers when three of them got into a minor car accident with another car while driving through the town of Naples, the same town where Terrence Williams was. So Calkins had been the deputy on the scene. He cited Felipe for driving without a license and then put him in the backseat of his patrol car. The last time his brother saw him is when Calkins drove away with Felipe in the back of the cruiser. The brothers, like, went on to go to work that day. Like, they still went to work. And they told their boss what happened and, like, why Felipe wasn't there. And then the boss contacted the county jail to post bail for Felipe, which, like, what a nice fucking boss. Like,
Yeah.
he's like, I'll bail you out.
Damn.
I know, I wish that was my boss. But yeah, so he calls the jail and he's like, I'm gonna post bail for him. And then they tell him that Felipe had never been booked into the jail.
Where did he
So
go?
when, yeah. So they confront Calkins with that, and he claims, like, oh, I changed my mind about arresting Felipe because he was so polite and cooperative. And he claimed that he had then driven Felipe to a Circle K and dropped him
What is it
off,
with this
drove
guy in
away.
Circle K?
I don't know. I never saw him. Sorry. When contacted, the other driver in the car accident with Felipe gave a statement that contradicted Calkins' claims. He said that Calkins had been noticeably angry and irritated about Felipe not having a license or any kind of documentation. Said that they heard Calkins rave about how he was, quote, tired of pulling over people who don't have licenses. So 2 weeks after the accident, Calkins submitted his incident report, and Felipe's family filed a missing persons report and an official complaint against Calkins. A quote unquote investigation. I don't believe that this was a real investigation, but this investigation into the complaint against him was, they were like, oh, he's, he didn't do anything wrong. He's cleared of any wrongdoing. But Felipe's family especially has a lot of criticism about this so-called investigation. His wife, she says that the police never even interviewed her when
What?
doing this. Yeah. So, like, her husband goes missing and they don't even contact her, not ask her any questions, nothing. So, yeah. yeah, so Felipe Santos has never been seen or heard from since then. And the Circle K that Calkins claims to have dropped Felipe off at was only 4 miles away from the one he claims to drop off Terrence at. So yeah, suspicions surrounding this guy are, rising pretty rapidly. And then a recording of his call to dispatch, requesting the tow truck for Terrence's car. That gets released, and even more evidence is found. And that also conflicts with the statement that he made in his report. So, in this call to dispatch, he describes Terrence's car as being abandoned and obstructing traffic by blocking the road. And then he jokes with the dispatch operator, laughing while saying, quote, maybe he's out there in the cemetery. He'll come back and his car will be gone. And then he starts using inappropriate language and racial slurs and describing Terrence's car as a quote unquote homie Cadillac.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, because Terrence Williams was black, is black, where, whatever. So when confronted with these contradictions, Calkins says, oh, I was just joking around with a friend, blah, 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 and that he had moved Terrence's car to assist the towing company. And not to make it look as if it were abandoned. So then it was also discovered that 20 minutes after his call to the dispatch officer, Calkins requested a background check on Terrence Williams using an incorrect birthday. And that is notable because the day that he gave the phone with was a specific date that Terrence had given to other officers when he had been arrested in the past. So, like, he picked this one day and he would, like, lie to police and be like, oh, yeah, this is my birthday. Like, find info on him. And so they're like, okay, he's used this number before. So obviously, he got that information from Terrence. And in Calkins' like statement that he had written up, he claimed that he never knew Terrence's last name or any other personal details about him, but that's obviously false because he was like, check on Terrence Will a man named Terrence Williams with this birthday. So, like,
Yeah.
yeah. So these two men just completely vanished off the face of the earth. No one has seen or heard from them, like, to this day. And Deputy Calkins was the last person to see both of them alive. And his story with both of them is creepily similar.
Yeah.
So with the evidence posing such huge contradictions to his story, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and the FBI get involved in the case. So they have forensics experts, like, pulling over Calkins' patrol car. They put a hidden GPS on his car, hoping that if he had murdered them, as a lot of people suspect he did, then he would, like, return to the scene of the crime and lead them to the bodies. Investigators would take cadaver dogs to all the locations identified by the GPS, but they never found anything. And despite all of those inconsistencies in his story, the investigators didn't bring any charges against him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he was fired from the police department shortly after the conclusion of the investigation for lying to the police and for providing, like, conflicting information in both Terrence and Felipe's cases.
Well, that's good. That's a start.
Yeah. Also for not cooperating with the investigation into his stories and actions regarding the two men's missing persons cases, because he refused to appear before a grand jury. So, like, they tried to do something about it, but he was like, no, I'm not going. So then nothing never happened.
Well, that's stupid.
Yeah, so he was still considered, like, a person of interest, but no further action was taken against him. And then pretty much as soon as that investigation concluded, he packed up and moved to Iowa. So the cases go cold. And there are no leads until 2012, when a bunch of TV shows started discovering, like, started covering these cases and the investigations into Calkins. They talked about it on Dateline. There's a show called Disappeared that I really like, and there was an episode about him on there. Disappeared is a really good show, by the way. It's just, like, missing people who disappear without a trace and, like, no one knows what happened. And on Anderson Cooper's 360 segment, in 2017, the Investigation Discovery series Deadline Crime with Tamron Hall began investigating Terrence and Felipe's disappearances. And then Tyler Perry ended up going on Al Sharpton's MSNBC talk show to talk about it. And he offered a $200,000 reward for information connected to the cases.
Wow, that's cool.
So September 2018, a wrongful death civil suit was filed against Deputy Calkins on behalf of Terrence and Felipe's families. So Benjamin Crump, the civil rights attorney that is famous for representing Trayvon Martin's family.
Yep. And George Floyd's family, because I talked about him last time.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. So he was on this case too.
Aww.
So he announced the lawsuit in a news conference with Terrence's mother, Marsha, and Tyler Perry, chilling with him.
Nice.
Yeah, so Crump said that the lawsuit was coming after a decade of them doing research and working with the Collier County Sheriff's Department, and they wanted to hear Calkins explain his actions in a formal deposition.
Yes.
So a few months later, February 2019, Calkin and his lawyer filed a notion to dismiss the case on the grounds that Terrence and Felipe are presumed to be dead and that Calkins is not responsible for the deaths. So Florida state law says that people are presumed dead if they have not been home. This is what it says. They have not been home for at least 5 years and their actions can't be explained by investigators.
Hmm.
Which, 5 years isn't very long. Like, I don't know. I don't like that. So he argued that there's insufficient evidence to prove that he was involved in the deaths of the two men. And he argued that the statute of limitations for the lawsuit had expired. So Florida law states that a wrongful death lawsuit must be filed within 2 years of the date of death. But there is an exemption for murder cases. So the judge denied the motion to dismiss the lawsuit. Thank God. But Calkin and his team filed another request for dismissal in April 2019. So June 5th, 2019, there was a hearing for the motion of dismissal, and the judge did grant that motion. And he told the prosecution that they had 20 days to amend their complaint against Calkins before, like, everything was getting thrown out, basically. And unfortunately, that's the last I've been able to find on the case. Like, there's a bunch of Reddit threads that talk about this, and I 100% went down a rabbit hole reading all of them. But the general consensus out there is that Calkins fucking killed these guys and was in general like a racist piece of shit. There are some people who claim that the cases are an example of the Starlight Theory. I don't know if you've heard of that
No,
before.
I haven't.
So it was it it comes from this these cases out of Canada. I can't remember exactly where, but basically it is like this practice where these cops would drive people out to the edges of town or outside city limits and then abandon them there with nothing so that they would be forced to try to make their own way home. And I guess that there were these cops in Canada that were guilty of doing this to a lot of people of color. So some people think that he kind of did the same thing and he drove them out to like the Everglades or some shit because this is Florida. And they like drowned in a swamp or got eaten by an alligator or whatever the fuck. But I don't really believe that shit.
No.
I 100% think that he did some shady shit.
Yeah.
So, as far as I know, Steve Calkins is just back chilling in Cedar Rapids, fucking Iowa. And nothing else has come out of this case. Nothing I can find anyway. So, that is very upsetting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the two cases are way too similar for this to just be a coincidence.
Yeah, for it to be a
Like,
sheriff changes it if it was someone in a police department of a city or something, but to be a sheriff, your jurisdiction's going to be wider and people are going to be more likely to pull over for you. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was just like a deputy, but like he worked for the sheriff's department,
Yeah, but if
like.
I saw a sheriff on a car, I would pull over.
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course. Like, I don't know. The fact that it was like, okay, he put him in the car and then an hour later comes back with his keys.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. And he was never booked in anywhere. Like, there's no records of someone showing up at a hospital. Like, nothing.
Yeah.
So, like, I really think that he fucking killed these guys. And, like, it's just a giant piece of fucking shit.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there.
Yes. So I thought that this case, or these cases, I should say, were particularly relevant in today's political climate,
Definitely.
with cops murdering people of color, especially men of color.
Or just doing a shitty ass fucking investigation because they don't care.
That's true. And you know, Matt and I today we've been watching the People versus OJ, the American
Yes.
true crime story, whatever. I had never watched it before, mostly because I fucking hate the OJ case, because I fucking hate OJ. Like,
I
he's an
mean,
abusive asshole who 100% did it, by the
yes.
way.
Oh, a million trillion percent.
Like, so we're, I don't know, Matt really likes this series for some reason, which is very strange because I don't know anything else true crime that he likes. But he's watched it like 5 or 6 times. And so he's like, oh my gosh, you have to watch this with me. And the more I watch it, I just get so angry about this shit. It's like,
Yes, but at the same time, I think that series is super well done. Like, just their casting is really good.
yeah, oh, for
And
sure.
I don't know, I liked watching it because it's a big deal, for a bunch of different reasons. And since I wasn't really like experiencing it when it happened, it was kind of cool
Yeah.
to get the feeling of experiencing it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the thing that gets me the most is kind of like with this case, like there's so much evidence against this person and you're just like, "Oh, whatever."
Yeah.
Like in OJ's case, like there's no way he didn't do it.
No, there's
Like they had
other so, like there's no other plausible suspect.
Yeah, well, and even like Marcia Clark was like, yes, I've never had more physical evidence. Like, I've never had more proof in a murder case ever before.
Yeah.
And they still didn't convict him. And I feel like this is similar. Like, they have so much evidence against this guy, and they're just like, you know, it's fine. Or
Yeah.
like, it's very fucked up.
For real.
So yeah, there's that, guys. Somebody knows something.
Someone always
And
knows something.
yes, we are very determined to find the ending to these things because I don't like not having an ending.
Me either.
I'm ready to fuck some shit up.
Yep.
So yeah, that's this week's bummers for you guys.
Yep. We'll have more bummers for you next week. Don't worry. We'll ruin your week every week.
So, what are we gonna do next week?
I don't know. I feel like we've done some kind of heavier stuff lately, so maybe we should do like conspiracy theories, like that are like a little bit more lighthearted.
Yeah, we could do conspiracy theories or like hauntings. We haven't done a ghosty haunting one.
Not in a while.
Yeah, or we could do like alien encounters.
Ooh. I don't know.
Or do we want to make it a free for all? Just do whatever the fuck you want.
Let's do not murders.
Okay.
Not a murder.
Not a murder. Yeah, so we have lots of murder talk, so let's
Do we
do
want
no murder.
to make it like a shorter episode? Or not? Because I have one that'll be good for a shorter episode, but then I also have an idea for like a full length episode.
I guess I will do a little bit of research and see what I find because I don't have an idea for a short one. So I guess if I can find a short one, then we'll do short. But otherwise, full blown balls to the wall.
Okay. Yeah, let me know because I have. Yeah, I originally wanted to do something for my haunting one, and then I didn't get to do it because it's not long enough. So,
Okay.
yeah.
Yes, I will look for something.
Okay.
Is there a note we would like to end on today?
How about you sing everyone an A flat?
No, thanks.
Oh, a different note. Okay.
No. I've been dying of what is most likely coronavirus for the last 2.5 weeks? Yeah. I've had a fever for 18 days.
Solid.
I know, it won't go away. So I pretty much just lay in my bed like a big useless turd all day. I did make dinner last night and for a few nights, but last night, especially because it was Matt's birthday. So I was really nice and I made him dinner and a birthday cake. And then we ate that birthday cake straight out of the pan with forks on the couch.
Solid.
And yep, we ate half of it on the couch last night and then we ate half the other half for breakfast
Solid.
this
Love it.
morning. Yep. And then Matt called his parents today to say Happy Father's Day. And It was like, yeah, Katie made me this birthday cake and we ate it for breakfast. I was like, because we're adults. And it's like, not very good ones, but still adults.
Yes, precisely.
Yeah. And I also totally forgot that it was Father's Day because I was like, that's like, I gotta call my dad. I'm like, why? He goes, for Father's Day. And I was like, oh, yeah, I don't have one at home.
So really quickly, I sent Matt exclusive cute puppy pictures. So if you want to see them, you should look at his phone.
Oh, I
And
will.
then, yeah, I the only reason I knew Father's Day was coming up is because I have pretty good stepdad. So I was like, okay, siblings, now that I actually live close enough to like come over, I was like, we should all cook for Father's Day. Ooh, sorry.
Oh, you're okay. I've been
But
yawning all
fun.
day.
Yeah, so we were gonna cook, and then I was like, oh, well, yeah, let's do that, and then let's do an like family dinner on Friday because it's my parents' 10th wedding anniversary. And so when I say parents all the time, everyone, this is for you, Katie already knows. When I say my parents, I mean my mom and my stepdad.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's their 10th wedding anniversary on Friday. So we were going to do something, and then we just decided to combine it into one. So I went over there for Father's Day slash wedding anniversary today. And we had dinner, and Sean has midterms this week, so he was home studying. So just me and the dogs went. But it was kind of nice to just have like my family together. And like, I
Yeah.
mean, not that we don't love having Sean around and having Sam's boyfriend Dominic around and having Spencer's boyfriend Luke around. Like, we love having them around. But it's also kind of nice to just go back to like, here's our little family. And
Yeah.
I mean, we've only been a family for 10 years, so I don't really have that many like positive family memories of just our family. When my parents got married 10 years ago, and Sean and I will be together for 7 years in September. So that's
Yeah.
like most of that time. So, I mean, he's been coming to stuff for a while, and Sam's boyfriend has been coming to stuff for a while. So it's kind of nice to just do stuff just as a family once in a while.
Yeah, that is nice.
Yeah. So Trent was making like cornhole boards when I got there. Well, like he like made them himself. That's a
Wholesome.
dad thing to do instead of paying for them on the internet. Just make your own. So I didn't get very many dad things growing up, but I got some now. So he like made his own, and then he got ordered bags in the mail, and so the bags got here, and then we played cornhole.
Cute.
Yeah, it was nice. And then my parents were trying to decide how to decorate the boards, because they were literally just wood, today. And so he was like, let's make one of them NMU. So one of them's gonna be NMU, and then the other one's gonna be FAU, which is Florida Atlantic University, which is where my mom went.
That's like Margaret, her parents have a northern one and I think a Grand Valley one because I think that's where her brother went. So yeah, they have a cornhole set with their kids' schools on them too.
Yep. No, this is their schools. I mean, technically it's my school too,
I mean,
but
yeah.
yeah, no. That's, yeah. That's a very Midwest thing. So,
I love it. Good old cornhole.
yep. And then my family was trying to figure out what if you're supposed to yell something when you actually get it in the hole. And I was like, yeah, you yell cornhole. Like, it's part of the game. It's like
Screamy
when you're
Yahtzee.
playing Yahtzee, you yell Yahtzee, and when you're playing bingo, you yell bingo. Like, so when you get it in the cornhole, you yell cornhole.
I mean, sometimes when I'm just playing things, I just yell Uno, but that's generally not correct. But you could use it for cornhole.
You can use whatever you want.
You can say, "Oh my Atlanta," or "Yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers,"
Oh.
or I mean, there's all kinds of good things to say.
Yeah. So you can say whatever you want, but
Yeah. Go play cornhole, guys. It's good for you.
cornhole.
Yeah, we've been pretty lazy around here lately. I haven't showered in like 4 days, and I know Matt hasn't showered in like 4 days. He's just been like walking around in a bathrobe and underwear for like four locations. So we are pretty much killing it right now. But he hasn't been feeling well either, so we're both just sick and dying. And yeah, I've been wanting a new job. It's not going that great.
Oh, should I tell everyone my story about Juno's secret identity?
Oh, yes, you should.
Okay, so guys, I called Katie earlier because this happened, and then I called Sean to tell him, and then I called Katie to tell her was my second reaction. And so basically, I'm in the car with the dogs. We're going to my parents' house. Sean wasn't in the car, which is why I called him. And so we're in the car, and he has, since he just got his car, he has like the SiriusXM radio trial. So I always turn on Pop2K. So I had it on, and they were playing the real Slim Shady song. And both of the dogs were trying to sit on my lap at the same time, and I was singing along. So I'm like, "Won't the real Slim Shady please stand up?" And of course, little fucking Juno stands up against my chest and licks my mouth. And I was like, "Oh, Juno, are you the real Slim Shady?" So my dog is
I
a
love
real
it.
Slim Shady. And then the next chorus, Shelby did it. So both of my dogs are the real Slim Shady.
Oh my God. Dogs of mystery. Wow, they're so good at hiding their
I
identity.
know. I thought they just laid around the house and slept all day.
No, that's me you're thinking about.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting confused. They're all three
I
so
too.
loyal and pretty. You make faces, stick your tongue out.
I also eat out of a bowl on the floor, so. And poop in the yard.
But you don't pee on my bed.
No, I pee on my bed.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. Oh, yeah, so that's about it.
We forgot to do a good intro again.
Wow, we suck at
We
that.
did like a kind of intro.
You guys, you're just gonna have to get used to the fact that Natalie and I suck sometimes. And even though I know we radiate perfection, it's just it doesn't happen that way, unfortunately.
We
So,
just don't want
you don't.
everyone else to feel bad that they're not as perfect as us.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Exactly. So we have to dull our shine down a little bit for you guys so
Sorry.
that you don't get really depressed about your life. I'm just kidding.
No, that's us that are both really depressed about our lives. It's fine.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. The other day, I don't remember. Oh, I was just driving to Target to get some fucking cake mix to make Matt a birthday cake. And I was stopped behind this big giant truck that had this, like, kind of like a trailer thing. It was like a semi truck, but it had like a trailer bed attached to it, like a big, huge industrial size one. And the metal, like, bar where the, like the platform started on the back of the truck. It was like exactly like face level with me. And I was like, wow, like my brain instantly was just like, if I just ran my car into the back of that one, I would be decapitated. And like, I'm like, who the fuck thinks about that?
Me.
Like, I literally was just like, if I just did this, I would get decapitated. I would die. Like, what the fucking fuck? And I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna go to Target and get some LaCroix and some cake and some cake mix. And then like
That
that
reminds me of one of my favorite Weird Al parody songs, Constipated, which is a cover of the song Complicated by Avril Lavigne. And I don't, are you familiar with this one? I'm gonna tell everyone anyways.
I am
Okay,
familiar.
so like the first verse is like he orders a lot of pizza and then no one shows up to the pizza
Yep.
party, so he gets constipated. So that's the first chorus, is why'd I have to go and get myself so constipated, right? So then the second verse is he's making out with his girlfriend, and then they have the same family crest, and then he finds out it's his cousin. So it was, how am I supposed to know that we were related? And so then the third verse, though, is he's on a roller coaster and he stands up, and then he's singing about how he's decapitated. And if you haven't listened to it, you should just go listen to it because it's amazing.
Yes.
Weird Al's incredible. Katie and I saw him in concert together with Sean.
I love telling people that story. I'm like, yeah, I saw Weird Al in concert, and they're like, what the fuck? Why?
Why wouldn't you?
I love
Oh,
it.
I have the shirt from his tour, and
It
I
was
still
actually
wear it all the time.
it was a really good
It
concert.
was. He's such a good entertainer.
Yeah, I loved it. I would 10 out of 10 go again.
Yes. I always tell Sean, I'm like, Sean, if you divorce me for whatever reason and I don't know how to move on, I'm going to wait a bit. And then to find someone new, I'm going to go to the Weird Al concert and find the most normal guy there. And that's going to be the next person that I'm with. So.
I'll just go back to tech and get an engineer student again. Just kidding, because I'm already old, so.
That's my backup plan.
I think that I'll just find a really rich old senile guy and marry him and wait for him to die.
Okay.
And then me and you are going to go on some trips.
Let's do it.
Perfect. Nobody steal our plans. These are our
Yeah.
ideas.
Well, I mean, I'm married, so if you want to go pick up guys at the Weird Al concert, go for
Okay.
it. But
I think I'll just line them up in the back. And like, Matt doesn't really get jealous at all, except about Tyler Jensen. So,
who is fabulously gay?
yes, which I tell him that every single time. Like, I don't know. But yeah, Matt wouldn't even care. He'd be like, yeah, girl, back. He'd be like, go stock up. Or he'd be like, hey, go marry some rich guy so we can have all his money when he
Yes.
dies.
Yeah.
So he's, I'm sure he'd be on board.
Okay.
Perfect.
Well, now that we have the rest of our lives planned.
Yeah, I guess we'll go get started living those lives. So sorry, guys, we're gonna go.
It's just for this week, don't worry. We'll ruin your next week too.
Yeah, next week I'll have a good story about picking up an old rich dude for you.
Okay.
I'm going to go to Bill Gates's neighborhood and see what I can find.
Perfect. I mean,
Right. It's just right over there. It's very close to me.
was gonna say, go hop on Mercer Island, or you could just go to the Amazon corporate and just.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Gates lives in Medina, which is pretty close to where I am, so I'll just go over there.
Lots of options.
Go find myself some rich dude.
Or if you want to come here, I live pretty close to Evanston, which is where they based Mean Girls in. So,
Ooh.
yeah.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, it was North Shore, Chicago. It's like they go to North Shore High School and whatever. Yeah, it's based off the North Shore, like Winnetka, Evanston, and
I don't know why I never put that together.
I don't know. But Regina George's house is in Canada. It's not actually in Evanston or anything, but it is a really nice town. That's where Northwestern University is.
So fancy, a bunch of bougie bitches.
Yeah, no, I live in the same town as the Six Flags. So we got that old guy who likes to party.
My God.
Yeah.
He just hangs out
Oh
everywhere.
yeah, you know, he stands out in front of Six Flags 24/7.
With one of those signs that he twirls
Just
around.
dancing.
It says this way. This way to Six Flags. We're having ticket sales.
Yeah.
Right, guys. This has been Spoopy Creepy.
Yeah.
I hope that you were thoroughly spooped.
And I hope that you were crept to the max.
At least, like, minimally crept is what we're asking for. So,
We're hoping
if
for the maximum level of crep, but if you hit, you know, a minimum level of crep, that's fine too.
yeah, fill that maxi pad with crepe.
Some episodes will be creppier than others.
And then next week, I guess we'll just see whatever the fuck we come up with.
Yep, that's not a murder.
All right. Okay. Well, that's that.
Okay, bye guys.
Bye.